Wait, start over.
It's going.
Really?
Yeah.
My name's Mary Lynn Ricecup. You may recognize me from many TV shows and movies that I've been in, or not, you know, or not. Sometimes people look at me and they go, do I know you? And I'm like, yeah, it's from TV.
As she just told us, that's Mary Lynn Ricecup in a clip from her comedy special, Mary Lynn Ricecup, Live from the Pandemic. She's best known for her portrayal of computer whiz Chloe O'Brien on the action drama series 24. But Mary Lynn is also a comedian. Her resume includes The Larry Sanders Show, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and Gilmore Girls, as well as several movies. Mary Lynn demonstrates her personal and intimate story-based approach to stand-up to great effect in the special. We caught up with her at her home in LA to talk about her career, forging her comedic voice, and why she decided to release a special in the middle of a pandemic.
I was prepping to record a comedy album in front of a live audience, and then my producing partner, who you talked to, Chelsea, and I bring her into this one because she did everything for it. It like produced, directed it. But without her as like a sounding board and someone who knows my comedy really well, I probably wouldn't have done it. Because what she was seeing is you're doing all this stuff that's happening now and no one's ever going to see it. And I said, okay, let's do it. So we couldn't use the Zoom that had an audience because that would have been a technical nightmare. It didn't look correct. So we lit it and, you know, made sure our sound was as tight as we could make it. And I did it in my garage with no audience so I could capture stuff that was happening in and around the pandemic and my life. And then I also had some like foundational pieces from my stand-up, which carried me through, allowed me to have, you know, more navigate a little bit easier and keep the energy going for the stuff that was more new.
Mm-hmm. I found it very interesting that there was this musical score that accompanied your stand-up in the special. Did you want to include this to compensate for the fact that there was no audience and consequently no laughter?
I think so. I mean, I don't know if I would use the word compensate, but yeah, that's not a bad word. You know, I watched it without any sound and I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. Like, I'm glad I did this and, you know, gave myself a pat on the back. And then I handed it off to my friend who's brilliant at accompanying. He's from the Comedy Store. He's a musician. He's a comedian. Or he's played behind comedians at the Comedy Store and done tons of work like that of scoring comedic things. And, you know, I said, would you do this?
So I'm a pretty powerful presence. One time someone told me, hey, you look like someone who might be on Parks and Rec. Well, that's not even a person. That's like a conglomerate of an idea that they have in their head. But I'll take it.
When I watched it after the score was on, it really accentuated my odd way of telling stories. You know, and everyone's unique in their own way, but I certainly don't have your typical rhythm and sort of call and response type of a thing that you would think comedians have.
Mm-hmm. It worked really well because he obviously like responded to the content of what you were saying. So the tone shifted. It was emotional in keeping with whatever you were talking about at the time. And yet it didn't overpower.
I like that you're getting into these aspects of it because you saying that made me want to take that further and say, you know, with both him and Chelsea, there's that trust in creating something like this too. And also, you know, artistically speaking, you're forced to work within those options. And I think this was also a really good exercise in that, and that it suits my personality and my voice really well.
For sure. Your special features four main themes: fame, pandemic, marriage, and dating. Which of these themes was the most challenging for you to create material for?
Oh, I didn't think the end of that sentence was going to be to create material for. I guess fame is the most annoying, but I still feel compelled to talk about it. But it feels a little bit cringy because it's such a specified thing. The divorce was not hard to come up with, but it was hard. It wasn't hard to say. It was actually kind of cathartic to say.
I actually got divorced right before the pandemic, so I could really be alone. My divorce started when my husband left me. He is so quiet. I did not hear him leave. I just kept walking past the bathroom. I was like, something is different. Something is different. And then I realized that one of the electric toothbrushes was missing. Like, oh, that guy.
In my own way, I'm like, I don't know if I should say this stuff, but then I'm glad I did, because, you know, the whole idea is that so many people experience that, and then I can take the truth and heighten it and say some things that other people can get a release from, as I did in writing it and performing it.
Yeah. At one point in your special, you say that you are overthinking something. And I noticed when you were on the Craig Ferguson show in 2010, you said that your problem in life is that you always go inward. What do you mean?
Oh my God. You are so great. What a lovely interview. Thank you for saying that, seeing that.
Well, thank you.
Specifically, performing and as a comedian, it relates to, I had to learn to push out instead of being reactive. Even when you act like you're letting people in, you know, the best comedians, they're always going to like drive it forward. The audience is never going to take you somewhere that you don't want to go. And that's not to say that you're not going to be open and there's going to be surprises. And of course, the audience is the most important thing, but you are the driver, you know, and you've seen other comedians talk about it's a fight, you know, and it's you got to crush them and you got to beat it down and you got and there is a truth to that, because you're wrangling people and you're asking for their attention, and you don't have the luxury, I guess, is more the way of looking at it. You don't have the luxury to give that energy, and they don't want you to, because you're putting on the show. And there was a while where people would describe me as dry, like really dry. And I never really saw myself that, but that's a defense mechanism, because I would, you know, I would get flatter and I wouldn't do the full expression because it was like a defense.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I wonder, though, just pursuing this idea of going inward and overthinking a bit more, I wonder, though, if doing that is kind of an advantage, because you have to do that to create your stand-up material, don't you? You have to look inward and kind of overthink things, don't you?
I think so. And again, I'm so happy to be talking to you at this point in my life about this, because I think it's starting to become a strength for me, you know, finally. And that's a great place to be. And that relates to what we're saying about performing in the garage by myself.
I realized that my anger just exists. I don't need anyone from the outside world to trigger it. And I don't want a therapist to dampen it. Okay? I want to foster it. I want to let it grow. It's like my golden child. I've actually made friends with my anger. I have named her Linda Finkelstein, and she's my business partner. So we have the best time. Now when I wake up in the middle of the night, just like, you know, chomping gum, I just talk to Linda.
It becomes a strength when you can go inward and be able to get a bit out of, you know, the pandemic, which is we're alone in our houses. And so to find stuff in my own head is good.
Mm-hmm. You're probably best known for playing computer whiz Chloe O'Brien on the action drama TV series 24, alongside my fellow Canadian Kiefer Sutherland. Was that a difficult transition for you to go from comedy to drama?
That was scary for sure. I had the confidence, speaking of inner, I did have the inner confidence that I could do it as an actor, but I still was really nervous because it was a hit show. I had never been on a drama. I didn't know if I would fit into the tone of the show. But the way it came to me was kind of perfect, because it's like a couple of scenes per episode. You know, they hired me on for 4. They hired me on for 6. You know, if you had told me, okay, you're going to star in this show and you're going to be on it for 8 years, I probably would have ran the other way, but I was able to again do that trial by fire, learn on the job, and it was pretty scary. I mean, my first day, I thought I had it because I'm just like a quick study. I don't like to do stuff that involves working on it, but I do now. But at the time, you know, I went over the lines and I'm like, oh, I got it. And then it completely left my head because I didn't have it. And it was more complicated. You know, it wasn't sitcom dialogue, which that in itself can be a little bit tricky, but it wasn't a natural. I had to say things that I didn't know what they were. And I learned really quick how to work that way.
Mm-hmm. Because you're a quick study. Have you been able to channel any of your dramatic acting experience into your stand-up and comedy acting?
Not to the extent, not like 24 style act. I mean, 24 was its own thing altogether because it starts at a level of intensity.
Who is this?
Jack, it's me.
Chloe, where are you?
Chang had me. I jumped out of his truck. Adrian's dead.
I know.
Then you got my message. You know, he used the device to launch the attack on the Chinese carrier. The only thing I did wrong was to believe him. Please, let me make this right.
Give me your cross streets, I'll pick you up.
You know, you're at code red, and that's where the show starts out. So you find these levels, and it was a really special club to be in because we all kind of understood it without speaking about it. Like, there were times in between takes where you'd just, like, laugh because the energy was so, you'd have to start there and then find the levels within this already. And, you know, Kiefer was great at that, too, not making it a testament to somebody who can kind of hold that line of stuff that's unbelievable, but yet then still it's believable and you care about the character. So you kind of like let it ride through these things where it's like, okay, that would never happen. But you're there and we're all there and we're making this show and we're going to find a way to make that believable and enjoyable. Anyway, that was a sidetrack, but I'm enjoying speaking to you. But that level where it's, you know, a nuclear bomb is going to hit and you're the only one that can fix it. No, that's not going to enter into my stand-up. But certainly many times in storytelling, which is primarily what I do. I mean, I'm always excited when I can come up with a good one-liner, but I always have act outs that require acting, but it's more fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You wrote and performed your own one-woman comedy show, Mary Lynn Spreads Her Legs, a few years back. It's a powerful statement on postpartum depression. Why did you want to do a one-woman show about this very subject?
This was another thing. At the time, a friend of mine was a director at a theater company, and he was kind of, and I think looking back on it, this was just part of my development as a writer and a performer. He was nudging me to do a show, which I'd done shows before, but he was nudging me to do it about this material and did kind of a series of casual interviews with me. And we worked together to delve into this area. So it was kind of with his help and with him shepherding me through that I, again, took that kernel of, there was a lot of truth in there, and then found these ways to heighten it within being dramatic and funny for stage. There was a lot of really funny stuff in that show that I plucked out for my stand-up, but there was a lot of really hard stuff that I, you know, I had planned to, like, take it to New York, and I kind of just let it go and went back towards stand-up because I was done with it. Like, a lot of it was really hard, and my husband at the time, I really feel for him because he sat in the front row and I talked about, you know, not only the postpartum, but how he and I got together, which was, we didn't know each other very long before we had a baby. So it was a working through of all those things and it, you know, important themes. But again, I kind of let go of the more dramatic parts of that.
Was it a cathartic experience, though, in terms of helping you deal with your postpartum depression?
Yeah, very much so. Very much so.
What haven't you done yet that you really want to do?
I think I'm leaning more towards writing.
Is it a memoir?
I'm trying to have it be, I mean, a lot of it is memoir-ish, but I'm trying to make them standalone essays, even though, of course, there's there is one about, you know, when I first arrived to LA. There's one about, you know, starting comedy, bad auditions. One of my favorite ones is just when I used to work at Denny's, but it's a whole chapter of just, you know, me making the ranch dressing at Denny's, and I really enjoyed that one. And then other ones are talking about the end of my marriage. So yeah, it's a similar approach to my comedy, and that came out of some solo podcasts I did where it was the transcribing of them and then going back in and writing again these personal stories.
Okay. Mary Lynn Ricecup, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. This was such a pleasure.
Mary Lynn Ricecup is a comedian and actor. Her latest comedy special is Mary Lynn Ricecup, Live from the Pandemic. You can find out more about Mary Lynn and how to watch her special at WPR.org/beta.
It was really a galvanizing moment that a lot of people did not forget, and the name Charlie Hill became famous in Indigenous communities almost immediately.
Author Cliff Nesteroff tells us how Wisconsin's own Native American comedian Charlie Hill made a name for himself. That's coming up in just a moment. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.